Hi, my name is Cecile. I'm 25 years old. Today is March 2nd, 2020. We're in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and I'm here with my friend Fidel. He's a vet.
My turn?
Your turn.
Okay, my name is Fidel Sanchez, and I'm 81, soon to be 82, and today is March 2nd, 2020, location Las Cruces. And I don't have a partner, so I'm just here by myself.
Sounds good. So, Fidel, you wanted me to start by asking you where you grew up and what that was like, what your childhood was like. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. I went to, when I first started school, I went to a one-room schoolhouse with one teacher and about 12 grades, but there was only one and two in this grade, three and four in that grade, and stuff like this. So that was my first 7 years of school, was in a one-room schoolhouse with one teacher. Well, we ended up with having about two teachers. But
just two?
Yeah. So
where was that?
That was here in Las Cruces. It was on Campo Street where the Seventh-day Adventist Church used to be. My mom was a Seventh-day Adventist, so, of course, she got me in that school. And then from then, after that, I started junior high at Alameda Junior High. And from then on,
what high school did you go to in town?
Las Cruces High School. We were the last class at that building that's a courthouse now.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit about what the most important people were in your life, and tell me a little bit about them?
Well, I think the most important people was when I went to junior high, I started taking trombone lessons. So when I went to high school, I was already playing, so I was in the band and the orchestra. So I played, I guess I must have been good because I made all state orchestra in Albuquerque. And I remember Mr. Kramer was the orchestra, and he got me a 4-year paid music scholarship to New Mexico State University.
That's a huge deal.
Can you tell me
a little bit more about what made you pick up the trombone versus like any other instrument?
Well, my mom and I went to see the music teacher at the junior high. And he asked me, what would you like to play? And I said, yeah, I didn't know anything about instruments. So he looked at me and says, you look like a trombone player. and that's how I started. But anyway, once I graduated and came to New Mexico State University, I also enrolled in a civil engineering course. And I could do both the music and the engineering for 2 years. And then I had to drop something. And I hated to drop the 4-year scholarship. But I did. And I just ended up graduating as a civil engineer. And at the same time when I enrolled at the New Mexico State University, you had to do 2 years of ROTC. I was already in the Army National Guard because my cousin was a captain. Sammy Chavez was a captain at the National Guard. And he came by and recruited about 4 or 5 of us at the high school. So I was in the Army National Guard already. And I got a funny story about that because at that time, the Guard had 90-millimeter cannons. And the shells were about 4 feet tall. And they weighed about 100 pounds. And we were skinny little guys. We couldn't pick up the shells. So we just did other jobs on the cannon.
What other jobs did you do on the cannon?
Well, the cannon had, on either side, had an elevation control and an azimuth control. And it was cranked. So you looked at a telescope. And when they used to bring sleeves from a Fort Bliss. And we used to practice shooting at them. So one guy would follow the sleeve, the other guy would do the upper down. That's the only thing we could do. But anyway, so then when I enrolled at the university, they had two ROTC units, the Army and the Air Force. Well, I was already in the Army, so I didn't care. I just came up to the line, and there was two guys there, and they'd say, you go to the Air Force, you go in the Army, you go in the Air Force, you go in the Air Force. So I ended up in the Air Force, which was fine with me. I had no intentions of going into the Air Force. Well, after 2 years of ROTC, they took us down into the auditorium somewhere. Might have been Milton Hall. Milton Hall used to be a big auditorium.
Now that we're in.
I played some concerts here. At the hall. Uh-huh. So anyway, at the end of 2 years, they took us in there to do what they call a Stainine test, which is an IQ test all day long, 20 minutes on math, 20 minutes on this, you know, that type of test. So when the results came out, I looked at the board and I said, I qualified for pilot. I mean, how many pilots are in Las Cruces, you know? So I told my wife at that time, I says, pending a physical. So I says, well, you know, I haven't taken a physical in a long time. So I took a physical. I had 20/20 eye vision, and everything checked out okay. So I enrolled in what they call advanced ROTC. So now I'm in the regular Air Force Reserve, because that's like a reserve unit. So after a few months I had two uniforms in my closet. I had an Air Force uniform and an Army uniform. And I started thinking, so I talked to the colonel. I says, you know, colonel, I says, I'm still in the Army. And he looked at me and said, my God, you can't be in the Army and the Air Force at the same time. So we got in this car, and we went down to the Air Force recruiter, and within 15 seconds, I went from the Army into the Air Force. So then after you graduated from the university, I earned a civil engineering degree, mm-hmm. and also a second lieutenant commission in the Air Force. And I was programmed to go into pilot training.
So you graduated. How old were you when you graduated?
Oh, my God.
Maybe like 21.
21 or 22 around there. So
you were pretty like qualified by the time that you were that age, ready to go.
Well, that was.
What happened when you graduated?
Oh, after I graduated, at that time, the Air Force was giving you, if you were going into pilot training, they would either you could go in right away or 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or a year. So I took a year because I wanted to try out civil engineering. And if I didn't like the Air Force, well, at least I could come back to work. So I worked for the Forest Service, Santa Fe Forest Service, for a year. And then I went into pilot training. And pilot training is a 56-month course, very rigorous course. PE, the first 6 months, you train in a jet, but it's a real easy jet to fly. It's called a T-37. And after if you can pass that, then they take it to the supersonic jet fighters, which is the T-38. It's also the NATO's freedom fighter. And if you watch the astronauts, they always fly this little white jet. That's a supersonic T-38.
What do you remember about flying that plane?
Oh, that's exciting. I mean, especially like formation flying. You know when you see the Blue Angels or we did all that.
You know, can you tell me about like one day that you had to do formation flying? Like what, you have any memories of that?
Well, I'll tell you the first day. It was pretty exciting. It was a heart attack flight because there's four of us, four planes. And the T-38, well, the T-37 was a slow, big wing, so you were close, but not that close. On the T-38, the wingspan was very short, I think about 4 or 5 feet on either side. So when you came up to formation, you could see the color of the guy's eyes. I mean, that's how close you were. And then you're going fast, you know. I mean, you're not going slow. You're going about 400 or 500 miles an hour. And you do all these kind of loops and turns. And you never take your eye off of the leader. You know, whatever he does, you do. So that was pretty exciting. But after a while, you got used to it, just like anything else. You know, then it became fun.
Let's see. Let me ask you some more questions. Can you tell me, you talked a little bit about training, but what are some things that you remember about adapting to military life?
Let me tell you about after graduation from poly training. Then there was about 26 in my class, and we all got assignments to different types of aircrafts. And I was assigned to a B-52, which is a big 8-engine bomber. So I flew that for about 3-4 years, and I was during the Vietnam conflict, I flew a lot of bombing missions on that B-52 over Vietnam. And that was very stressful and scary.
Yeah. Can you tell me what you remember from that?
What I remember from that?
Mm-hmm.
The flying wasn't easy because we were fully loaded with bombs and had to refuel twice in the air, so that's pretty stressful. But I think the scariest part was we were always waiting for the missiles to come up and get you. But we had what they call an electronic warfare officer, and he was trained to listen to radar sites that had these missiles. And each missile has a different sound when they track you. And we used to call them bird calls because they sound like bird calls. They go beep, 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 doo, doo, like that. So he knew exactly what kind of missile would be fired at us, whether it was a heat seeker or a radar type or whatever. So he could interfere with the radar on that missile. So anyway, that was pretty exciting. Scary. Because we'd be coming in for a bomb run, and he would say lock on, which means that the radar sight's locked onto us.
What happens when that, once he says that, what do you do next?
When he said that, you tighten your seatbelt a little bit tighter because you might have to bail out. And we were pretty high. We'd come in at 39,000 feet, which is pretty high. And thank God that I never had a missile fired at us. But it was a 13-hour round trip from I was stationed at Guam in the Pacific. And it was a 6-hour flight to Vietnam and 6-hour flight back home. So it was pretty stressful.
How did you stay in touch with your family and friends back home during this time?
During that time, my family we were stationed in Pease Air Force Base up in New Hampshire. So it was just by mail and stuff like that.
You wrote letters?
Pardon me?
You wrote letters to each other?
And the strange part about it was that when I was at Pease Air Force Base, my crew wasn't scheduled to go to Vietnam until after I was ready to get out of the service in June of 19-whatever it was. And so my crew wasn't scheduled to go to Vietnam. So one morning, the wing commander came in to give a briefing every morning, and he says, we need a volunteer to go to Guam because one of the pilots from another squadron had to go home on emergency leave, so they had to replace him. So I volunteered, and that was really something, you know. I volunteered, and 2 days later I was shipped out.
Yeah.
So
you didn't have a lot of time to process that.
No. So that was, it made everybody mad. So after I came out of the regular Air Force, I got hired by Continental Airline as one of their pilots. And one of the first assignments that I had with Continental was to fly the 707 back into the Vietnam thing. But this time, I was taking the soldiers that were going from the United States to Vietnam, and then I was bringing them home from that. So that was, I was back in the war with a different uniform, though. So that was kind of neat.
What was it like talking to all the soldiers who were leaving?
Well,
taking them home.
Oh, coming home?
Yeah.
Oh, they were real happy, of course. Yeah. But going back, there was a very sober bunch. I don't blame them. But I did that for about until the Vietnam situation finished, and then I just started flying here in the States. Yeah.
So you were a commercial or airline pilot for how long?
I flew for Continental for 32 years.
Is that where you retired from?
Mm-hmm. And let me show you. This is a list of all the airplanes that I've flown.
So do you want to read these off? Let's read those off
real
quick.
Well, I can read it off. Mm-hmm. Okay, in the Air Force, I flew a Cessna 150, which was the first airplane. And then we flew the T-37, T-38. I told you about that, supersonic. Supersonic flying is very, very exciting because as you're breaking the sound barrier, you get a little shock wave in front of the airplane. It's like a little flame.
And you can see it?
Yeah. And the faster you go, it starts moving back because you're breaking the sound barrier. And pretty soon it gets behind you, and then all of a sudden everything just gets quiet. You just fly around, no sound at all. Really weird.
That's amazing.
Anyway, and then I flew the B-52, and then I actually joined the Air Force National Guard or Reserve Unit, National Guard, Air Force National Guard in Van Nuys, and I flew the C-97 for them. And then when I went to work for Continental, it was a Boeing 707 taking the troops in and out of Vietnam. And after I did that, then I started flying this Boeing 727, which is a passenger plane. It's a beautiful airplane. And then I flew the 737, and then I flew the DC-10, which is a big airplane. On that one, we used to fly from LA, Honolulu, Australia, Taiwan, all those places. And I also got a chance to fly the DC-9, and before I retired, I flew the Airbus 300, which is another big airplane. During all this time, I also took lessons on a helicopter.
So you have to tell me about that, obviously.
Well, the helicopter?
Yeah.
I tell you, helicopter flying is a lot of fun.
What's different about it than flying an airplane for you as a pilot?
Because on a helicopter, you can go up and down, sideways, backwards, forward, whatever you want. It's, you know, in an airplane, you can just go forward, right? You can't go backwards. So that was a lot of fun.
Why did you decide that you wanted to do that?
When I came out, I had what they call a GI Bill, and you had so much money to use up. So I took a couple of courses I was living in California at the time. So I took a couple of courses, fun courses at Moorpark College, you know, like astronomy, music appreciation. I forget what the other courses I took. So I still have some money left over from the GI Bill. So a friend of mine, a Continental pilot, had a school up in Santa Barbara that he taught helicopter flying. So he said, hey, you want to fly the helicopter? I said, yeah. So I went down there and took lessons and got rated on it. It's called rated. This is what a license looked like, a pilot's license.
So,
tells you what airplanes. And those airplanes that you're listed on there that I flew captain on those airplanes.
Wow.
And the rest of these were I just flying co-pilot.
Oh, I see.
But anyway, that's how I got into helicopters.
So I have a question about music. So because it was definitely something that was a big part of your life.
It is.
Currently. Can you tell me more about throughout your life?
At the end of the 2 years, I put my horn in the case. And then I went to fly. I did this. I did that. About 50 years later, I moved back into Las Cruces because I lived in California. And had this friend of mine call me up, and he says, hey, he says, do you still have your horn? And I says, you won't believe this, but I've been carrying it around for 50 years. I still have it. He says, well, we're taking some refresher lessons down at the music box. He says, why don't you? So I did. I says, okay. So I took the horn out to the music box, and I told the guys, I said, would you kind of clean it up and get it? So they did. I picked it up a couple of weeks later, and the guy says, take care of this horn because they don't make parts for it anymore. And this was a horn that I first started in junior high. So after a couple of lessons or refresher lessons, we were in a class about 20 people there, and some of the other people were in there to learn how to play a trumpet or how to play a clarinet, or they were all beginners. So when we were taking a refresher lessons, we were just like beginners. So we look at and we started playing like Mary Had a Little Lamb, that type. But it all came back, the music, the reading of the music, playing of the music. I was real surprised because it all came back. So after a couple of months of that, the instructor said, hey, you guys are ready to go play in a concert band. I said, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. We didn't think we were that good. So I joined the New Horizon Concert Band, and I played with them for about, well, after I played with them for about 2 years, I like classical music more than I do band music. So then I joined the New Horizon Symphony Orchestra. They just had a concert Sunday.
Can't believe we missed it.
Yeah.
Wait, yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so we played about 3-4 concerts a year in the symphony. So I played with them for about 10 years, I guess, yeah. And last year was my last time that I played with them because my hearing was going bad by that time. After flying all these airplanes, you'd be surprised, the noise and everything else, how it affects your hearing. So on the trombone, you have a slide, and there's 7 positions on there. So if you're just off that an eighth of an inch, you're either flat or sharp. So most of the time on a trombone, you have to listen to the note. Even though it sounds good to you, it might be sharp or flat. So I says, you know what, I better just close that book.
For everyone else. They don't have a...
So I played my last concert last year, which...
Where was that? Where did you play?
Here at the university. We played at Atkinson Hall. Yeah, so that was very exciting to get back to the music part.
Yeah. Did when you left and you started with the Air Force, did you think that you were going to be able to come back to music?
Never. But I carried my horn around.
So you moved, when you had it in California, you kept it there? Like you took it with you everywhere?
Let me tell you, in the Air Force, we moved... my kids were kind of small by that time, and I had 3 children, a daughter, Lorena, and Michael and Paul. And we moved 7 times in 5 years, major moves. So that was the worst part about service time.
Can you tell me a little bit about your kids?
About who?
About your kids.
Oh, my kids?
Yeah.
None of them decided to they took music lessons, but they didn't keep it up. And they're old now. As a matter of fact, my daughter had 2 boys. They got married. And I ended up with one had 3 kids. And the other one ended up with two kids, so I ended up with five great-grandkids. But my daughter Lorena married a police officer, so he retired. They're both retired. And my son Michael, he became an architect designer in Oxnard. He's got his own business up there, designs beautiful buildings. He's very artistic. And Paul, he came back to New Mexico State to get his degree, and he was an announcer here at the radio station. Because I think that was his major. He went into the radio business or something. He got hired by Disney Channel, Disney World.
That's wow.
So he just got his 25-year pin the other day working for Walt Disney.
That's huge.
And he married this lady, Laura. She also worked for Disney. And he was 46 when he first got married, and she was up there too. So there's hope for everybody.
That's so sweet.
But both of them work for Disney. And they're always in Disneyland because
they can.
They're kids.
So let's go back a little bit. There's some questions that you have marked here. Can you tell me a little bit about what your first few months out of the service was like?
Yes. As a matter of fact, when I came out of the service in June, I had a class date with Continental, but they canceled the class date. So I said, oh. So we came back to Las Cruces and moved in with my in-laws. I said, well, I wonder what I'm going to do, you know. So at that time, there was an airstrip out here. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. And there was a man there, or a pilot, that was teaching the ROTC students how to fly. So I went, and I said, hey, you know, I'm a pilot. I got the license. And he says, do you have an instructor ticket? And I says, no, I don't. He says, that's what I need. It's an instructor. So I said, well, call me if you need any other things. So I went home, and I was having supper at my mom's house, and the phone rang. And they say, hey, somebody here wants to talk to you. So I answered it, and it was the guy that I had just talked to. I have a charter to El Paso. Can you come down here, and I'll check you out on this aircraft? And I says, yeah. So we went down there. He had a nice, it was a Cessna 150, which I had flown before. It's a small little airplane. No, it was a big one. It was a 210. The big carries about 5 or 6 passengers. He says, I want to check you out on this tonight because tomorrow morning you have to take five professors to Santa Fe and Albuquerque. And I says, oh, my God. Okay, so we got on this airplane. We were going to take this lady to El Paso to catch one of her flights. And she's sitting in the back, and I'm taking off. And he says, okay, now do this. And I never had flown a big little prop like that. You know, I was used to jets and stuff. And he was telling me how to do this. And the lady back there is all scared, like, oh, my God, what am I doing here? So we landed in El Paso, and the lady got off. And then on the way back, he's still telling me, just like a brand-new pilot, you know, carburetor heat, do this, do that, do that. And we came into this airport that was, it's not here anymore, but it was there. And we did 3 landings, and that's all it took to check me out. He says, okay, come back here tomorrow about 6 o'clock in the morning. I says, oh, my God. So I says, do you have an aircraft manual I could read? Because I was used to going to school, you know, when you're checking out on an airplane, you go to school for about, you know, 2-3 months to get checked out, and you have check pilots and stuff like this. I mean, for somebody to tell you, brand new airplane, you got 5 professors to fly. So I stayed up all night reading about the, just like what you, when you buy a car, you know, you read the manual. But the next morning, one of the professors knew me because I went to school with his son. And so we talked a little bit, and he says, I says, okay, you guys, you know, hop on. So here I took him to Albuquerque and sent him. From then on, I did a lot of charter work for the guy for about 2-3 months. And then Continental called and says, we got the class waiting for you. So I went to L.A. and went to school again for another 2-3 months. At the end of 2 months, the CEO of operations came in and said, we got to lay off 100 of you guys. I said, oh, my God. So I'm out of a job again. So having a civil engineer, I started an interview with the city of Los Angeles, and they hired me.
What did they hire you for?
Well, I had a highway design option, and so I was doing a lot of street design for L.A.
So cool. That is so cool.
So anyway, I did that for about 7 months, and then Continental called them and said, okay, you guys, come on back. So mm-hmm. I came back. So. And then after a couple of years, in 1982, we had a corporate raider that took over Continental. And he took us into like fake bankruptcy just to break all the contracts. So here we are on the street again. I walked a picket line for about 2 years before the strike was over. And then went back flying and finished out my career after 32 years with the Continental and 8 years with the Air Force. So I tell everybody I cheated death for 40 years.
As a pilot, huh?
Yeah.
Can you tell me what your favorite plane was to
my
fly?
My favorite plane, I had two of them. I flew the DC-10. First I flew the 727, then I went to the DC-10. It just came out, and everything was brand new. I mean, everything was automatic and what have you, computerized control. And I flew that for about 10 years, and that was a beautiful airplane, flying overseas to Australia and New Zealand and all these other exotic places. And then I came back and I started flying the 727 again, which is a nice, fast, high-altitude jet. So those two were my favorite.
You like the fast ones, the fast, fancy ones?
Fast ones. As a matter of fact, I retired about 20 years ago, and I was still going 500 miles an hour. I've slowed down since that time.
Can you describe to me what you see when you look, when you're in your spot, when you're in your seat, what is it like looking out the window?
Oh, out the window. As a matter of fact, most people say, how can you see out the window? Because most, they have real little windows. But when you're sitting up there, you can see the whole world. And at night it's very, very exciting because you see the cities all lit up, different cities and stuff. In the daytime, you can see a lot of, well, you're up there, you can see. And you can see where the thunderstorms are, which is kind of scary.
What does that look like?
Oh, well, you can see the lightning and, you can't hear the thunder, but you can see the lightning and stuff. And, of course, on the radar, we have a weather radar, and you can see the cells. So that's how you avoid. You never fly into a cell. You either go around it, up over it. Because thunderstorms, they go up to 60,000 feet. Yeah, they go up high. And some airplanes, you can't go up that high, so you have to go around them.
Can you tell me about what you used to do for fun when you were in active duty? Like, what did you do when you had any free time?
On our days off, my crew was, we were young guys. We were all young captains. So during the days that we weren't flying, we used to play a lot of golf, a lot of tennis, this type of thing. As a pilot, especially as a commercial pilot, and as a captain, you have to take a first-class physical every 6 months. So that's a big motivation to stay healthy and no smoking, no drinking, this type of thing, you know. So we did a lot of jogging, you know, working out at the gym, that type of thing. So as a matter of fact, I still go to the gym on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm there at 6 o'clock in the morning.
What's your routine?
Pardon me?
What's your routine like?
Well, I go down to Planet Fitness, and they have all these kind of machines that are really neat. I mean, if you really want to work out, they have – it's a very nice place to go work out. So I go through about 6 machines, and it takes me about 45 minutes, an hour. So
I have
– good way to start the morning.
Yeah, I need to do that. Is it okay if I ask you about your wife?
Sure.
How did you meet
I
her?
Ended up with 2 wives.
Okay.
Like most pilots. Most pilots have 3 or 4 wives. Anyway, my first wife was Pat Summers from Las Cruces. We met in high school. And she followed me around and to all the Air Force bases and stuff. And that's who we had the 3 kids with. Mm. So I moved back home, back after we actually ended up getting a divorce, and I came back home. I didn't like California at all, so I came back home. And after I was here for about 10 years, I met Rose Marie Melon, and she was working as a assistant to the Dean of Engineering. So I was back. I was back in the engineering business. So. We've been married now for about 23 years, I guess. So I know a lot of, you know, I go to some of her functions, and I know some of the professors, because most of the professors are already up in heaven someplace. But it's back. I was back. I made a full circle. Full circle.
With the music and the engineering. Yeah. That's so cool. I think it's really interesting that you, when you left the military, you were still able to work as a pilot. Like, that's really exciting. You must have really enjoyed being able to still do that.
Oh, yeah. Flying is very exciting. It's more exciting than being a civil engineer. And you make more money.
That's important. What is it? Did you expect when you were growing up that you were going to be traveling this much in your life?
Yes, as a matter of, well, you know, I did a lot of traveling. So with my first wife and my kids, I took them to Europe. I took them to Honolulu and this type of thing. With my second wife, we went up to Europe after I retired. We took about a 2-week trip to Europe and stuff like this. But we don't do too much traveling anymore. As far as going to different places and stuff like that. I don't do too much flying now. It's too dangerous.
I mean, it's a dangerous game, period.
And especially now with this coronaviruses, you really don't want to get stuck in an airplane. Because, you know, if somebody's sick there, the
Everyone's
air circulates.
Sick, yeah.
And you can get the whole 300 passengers sick.
Mm. Well, so thank you so much.
I like to drive. So every time I go see my kids, I like to drive.
All right. Thank you so much, Fidel. I think we have to finish, but it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.